Hello and welcome to CIFAR Sounding. I'm your host, Simba Wiltz.
And I'm Asla Gonser.
CIFAR Sounding is a production of Central Florida Animal Reserve,
where we engage the world of the big cats through our mottos of compassion, conservation, and commitment.
At CIFAR, when it comes to big cats, it's about vision.
You can find out more about us on our website at cflar.org.
We're also on social media. Find us on Facebook at facebook.com/cflar and on Twitter at cflarbigcats.
We also have a YouTube channel at youtube.com/CFL Animal Reserve.
So for today's show, we're going to be talking about cougars. So let's just get this over with right now.
It's not that bad. Come on. All right. You ready?
Let's go.
15 freakishly fast fun cat facts.
Common name, cougar.
Genus and species, Puma concolor.
Subspecies, 7.
Average shoulder height, 2 to 3 feet.
Average body length, 4 to 6 feet.
Average weight, 110 to 220 pounds.
Lifespan, 10 to 20 years.
Land speed, 40 to 50 miles per hour.
Conservation status, least concern.
Native lands, North and South America.
Key physical feature, long tail and larger hind legs.
Likes solitude and jumping.
Dislikes swimming.
Jumping ability, 18 feet high, 40 to 45 feet long.
Primary diet, carnivore generalist, will eat any animal it catches, 3 to 6 pounds per day.
Cougars at CIFAR are Kukla, Cheyenne, Kekega, and Ixtatoyela.
Going back to the 15 facts that we just spouted out, one of the interesting ones there is the conservation status least concern.
Well, the cougars have actually been one of the more successful of the big cats that are out there, and success is usually measured by range as well as speciation. And the cougars have one of the largest ranges of all the big cats. They have ranged all the way up from North America down into South America. So basically the entire Western Hemisphere, you can find some kind of cougar species.
So least concern is essentially not concerned.
It's the scientific name for we think that they've got a stable population that is self-sustaining. But it's important to note that least concern is for cougars in general. It's not necessarily for specific subspecies.
And that's another interesting point, is that there's some studies ongoing that may say there's really only one subspecies in North America.
Every once in a while, we seem to get into this cycle of human naming games, especially when it comes to the cougars. I remember as recently as the early 2000s, there were actually 32 subspecies of cougar, and the original taxonomy that was proposed at that time cut it down to 6 subspecies of cougar, but in that process ended up cutting out some species that were extremely vital. For example, the Florida panther. That was one of the subspecies that actually got cut out of the taxonomy.
Well, that brings us to the other point, too, that's interesting about cougars. There are at least 40 different names for the animal that we call a cougar. Some of the more common ones are the puma, the mountain lion, and the panther. But there's some other more colloquial names like the mountain screamer, the catamount.
They have the purple feather. The cougar in the Lakota language is Igmutanka, which just basically means big cat.
And yet they're the smallest of the big cats.
But a tremendous range in size. If you think about, they've got cougars that are basically proportionate in size to the prey that they hunt. So if you're up in Canada, you're going to get the Canadian cougars, which are huge cougars because they have to hunt elk and moose and things like that. But when you get down into South America, Central America, you'll get the much smaller Costa Ricans that can actually hunt capybara and agouti, things like that.
I actually did see a note online that says that the cougars closer to the equator are smaller than those further away.
Precisely.
Which goes with what you just said. Another interesting tidbit was that the Florida panther, which is also a type of cougar, eats not only ungulates, which is most common for cougars, deers and such, but they also eat armadillos and wild hogs that they find in Florida. So they've adapted to be a little different because of the food source that's available to them.
Yes, they truly are carnivore generalists, and it's amazing the range of things that cougars will eat. We know that the Florida panther particularly has always been partial to key deer, especially down in the Florida Keys and in that area. So the key deer has been a species of interest in the state of Florida, specifically because of the Florida panther.
The other interesting thing about the cougars is that they used to be all over North America, but in the early 1900s, they were what they call extirpated from the eastern North Americas, except for Florida, because we still have the Florida panther, but that they don't exist in the eastern United States other than Florida.
Yeah, there's always been a very tenuous relationship between the natural world and its major predators, and the cougar in general in North America has in many cases gone the same way as the wolf has, where wolves have certainly been seen throughout story and throughout history as evil pack animals that have done terrible things. You know, that's why we have the phrase big bad wolf.
That's true.
We really don't have a phrase of big bad cougar unless you're, you know, out late on a Friday night in some bars, some places. But with regards to the cougar, they are going to be solitary. They don't have the benefit of having a pack structure like a wolf that can augment them when they get into situations with people who are not going to be amenable to having them around.
Well, apparently cougars will sometimes have a loose connection with other, the females do, sometimes have a loose connection with each other, but not a pack in the sense like a wolf pack would be.
Yeah, and these connections that happen with cougars, it's very interesting how cats, especially big cats in general, come in the two flavors where you've got your cats that are considered purely solitary, like the leopards, and then you have your cats that are purely social, like the lions. But even within those groups, there's some variability based upon the circumstances and based upon their experiences. I think about cougars where they may overlap territory, share territory, and there's sort of an uncomfortable comfort that comes with keeping their neighbors at a specific distance. Yes, if they were in close quarters, it would likely result in a fight. However, cats are great opportunists. And if having someone else in their environment is useful to them, then they will certainly allow that to happen.
Having someone else in their environment, yes, I see your point as far as having some kind of loose connection with the other cats.
Yeah, it does lend credence to the fact that pumas, what is now known as the puma genus, was previously known as the felis genus. That was part of the taxonomy change. And we know that even feral cats will form large groups in order to survive and to pool their resources. A cougar is big enough that generally they won't have to form a large group, but I'm certain that if there were large groups of mountain lions roaming the area, that people would have a lot more concern than the solitary mountain lion that tends to run when somebody is around.
The other interesting thing, too, with the naming, it gets confusing because you have all these different names for what really is essentially the same animal with different species. As we mentioned, that at one time, 32 different species in North America. But the fact that there's all these different names for them, I don't know that most people would know that mountain lion and cougar and Florida panther and puma are the same animal.
No, we get a lot of that confusion. People will ask us, do you have any Florida panthers? And we might say, well, no, we've got cougars. And they might be surprised to find out that they are the same species as the Florida panther. Maybe not the same subspecies, but still the same species. It is also the only real cat that is a panther that is in its formal name, which is interesting too.
Well, that's a good point. You hear a lot of people talk about Black Panther, for example. That actually isn't a cougar, a Black Panther, because there are apparently no melanistic black, all black cougars. There doesn't seem to be any of that. But a Black Panther really is more, when people refer to that, really it's a leopard that's all black or a jaguar that's all black.
And cougars are such masters of hiding and avoiding people that if there was truly a black Florida panther or a black cougar out there, it's highly likely we would never see them.
That's a good point. So let's talk a little bit about what they do look like. I know when they're born, a lot of them are born with blue eyes and spots, but they change over time.
One of the best examples of this is our cougar Kukla, who was born at that facility prior to CFARS taking over. And Kukla, as a kitten, was very fuzzy, had blue eyes, wonderful dark spots, and chirped like a bird. In fact, when she mewled it, it was interesting because she was about the size of a domestic cat, but her sound was so much higher pitched than a cat of an equivalent size. And it really did kind of lend credence to the fact that she was obviously going to get a lot bigger. She also was not displaying any of the dander that most of the cougars will put off when they get to their adult coats, which I certainly found interesting because being in the Felis family and also being allergic to cats, I was concerned that a cougar was not going to be a species I could work with. But her dander changed when she lost her spots. She became one of those cats that was more difficult to breathe around.
Oh, at that point, she actually did have dander that caused you problems as being allergic to cats?
Yes, and I really wish that we had had the chance to study that in more detail because it was really fascinating that she was giving me no reaction as long as she had spots. But the moment she lost her spots and took on the tawny coat, then suddenly it was a completely different story.
So let's describe it a little bit. So you got the tawny coat, white underbelly, correct?
Tawny coat, white underbelly. Most of them will have a dark tuft at the end of the tail. Not tufted like a lion's tail. Their tail is going to be uniformly furred, but the end of it will have a dark tip. And in the front, they will generally have a white muzzle with dark marks on either side of the muzzle. Sometimes it looks a little bit like a mustache, like they've got a little bit of a Fu Manchu mustache coming down either side.
Well, mustaches are in these days.
Yeah, but they still have the round eyes. That's another part that sets them aside from the Felis family, is they don't have slitted eyes like a domestic cat. They have round eyes, which they certainly have all the benefits of having round eyes that all the other cats have. Of course, it also just gives them a much more personable look.
So do all the big cats have the round eyes then?
Yes. That is an adaptation that may actually be one of the dividing lines.
So going back to talking about some of the sounds they make, you talked about different chirps and purrs, and I know they make sounds similar to cats, but they also do an interesting scream that I've actually heard out at the facility.
Yeah, the scream of the cougar is legendary. It's the reason why they're called mountain screamers, and newcomers to the areas where cougars are endemic have on occasion called the police thinking that someone was being attacked when in fact it is just a cougar in heat. The other sounds that they make, you know, with regards to that, the screaming sound, they do chirp and they meow, and of course they purr.
Yeah, so they have some of those qualities that give you the cat feel.
And once you listen to the, once you've heard it a couple of times, then you can start to differentiate the difference between what a cougar call sounds like and what a person sounds like. But it does take a little bit of time for someone to get used to that noise, because it sounds like, especially when they're in heat, it sounds like they're just having such a terrible time of it. You can almost hear the "woe is me, somebody do something," you know, thing in their voice, which must be very attractive to male cougars.
It must be. And they want to do something about it.
They want to do something about it. Anything to make you be quiet. That is one of the only times that you'll find cougars wandering around together. You know, again, they're looking for a mate, or it may end up being a mother raising young.
So how many cougars do we have at the facility?
So we've got four cougars at the facility. We've got Kukla, who is the youngest that we've talked about. We've got Ishta Toyela. We've also got Kekega. We just call her Kiki for short. And of course, we've got Cheyenne. And Cheyenne has the distinction of being one of our oldest residents.
Thanks for listening to CIFAR Sounding. We'll be right back after these messages.
My name is Phyllis Park. I am the events coordinator for Central Florida Animal Reserve. Here are some of the events that we have coming up. The next event that's coming up will be our Member Appreciation Day on May 18th, which is a Sunday from 12 until 5 p.m. This is an opportunity to meet the CIFAR staff, see the cats in their home, to ask all of your questions and see what's going on with our future as well as with the cats. We hope to see you at this upcoming event. Come out and see us. Thank you for supporting CIFAR.
Thanks, Phyllis. Enjoy this musical interlude. CIFAR Sounding will be right back. You're listening to CIFAR Sounding with host Simba Wiltz and Asla Konser.
Cheyenne is going to make 18 this September.
That seems quite old, actually.
It is. And, you know, she's definitely got some of the signs and symptoms of being an older cat. She's starting to slow down quite a bit and has started to lose eyesight. So she's pretty much blind now, actually. We have to make sure that we give her audio cues to get her from point A to point B. She still navigates around well and is quite feisty in her old cougarness. But she is an interesting story just from the perspective of how much the entire world of big cats has changed in her lifetime. When she was born in 1996, it's strange to think that in 1996, that was the first year that Michael Jordan was winning his championship from coming back from his first retirement. And in 1996, it was still going to be 2 years before a little company called Google was formed. And now, and also in 1996, Cheyenne could be kept as a pet.
Oh, really?
The way that the laws were structured, Cheyenne was just a big cat. And whether it was in Florida and in a lot of other states, cougars were actually one of the upgrade level pets that people used to have because they are in personality so much like little cats. They're like big little cats, a lot more confident, but their behaviors and mannerisms were such that someone who had little cats could conceivably scale up to working with a cougar and have a certain understanding of it. Now you fast forward, of course, to today where cougars are considered class one animals and they have to be kept in special facilities and with you know, licensed people, at least in the state of Florida. It's a far cry to think that from the time Cheyenne was born, she went from a pet to being considered a dangerous animal that needs to be cared for in a very special way.
That is interesting in her lifetime that much change has happened. Does she have a roommate?
Yes, she's actually with Kiki and Ishta Toyela.
Oh, so the three of them are together.
It's our collection of cougars there, and it's actually a very interesting collection. Each of them has their own personality, and the way they interact is actually extraordinarily reflective of their personality, and also of the tools that they have at their disposal. One of the things that used to be done very often, especially with cougars, was declawing. Because so many cougars would be
adopted as pets
or otherwise, and also because cougars communicate a lot more with their mouths and their paws than some of the other cats. It's not uncommon for a cougar to say hello with a nip or a swat, and when they get into a feisty mood, they will paw at things in the same manner that a domestic cat might, at the same speed, at their size.
Yeah, that could be a problem.
Yes.
How big is a cougar paw?
Well, a cougar paw is small compared to a lion or tiger, but it's still going to be anywhere between, you know, 4 to 6 inches wide and heavily padded, of course, because it helps them get around quietly. But they're so quick that they literally can get up, smack you on the head, and be back on the ground walking away before you feel it.
It's like a magic trick.
Yes, a magic trick. And in one of my earliest big cat experiences, long ago when I first started doing this, I actually had a cougar that did that to me. And the speed at which it happened was so astounding. Now, this was a declawed cougar, so getting up and batting me on the forehead and walking away didn't take my head off, fortunately. But literally, the cat was walking away when suddenly I realized I had been struck. It was that fast. And I've always been impressed by that speed. It was a very quick lesson in how fast they really can be if they want to.
Well, you're lucky he or she was declawed.
Yes. And that may be one of the reasons why a lot of people declawed cougars at one point, because they had this tendency to do such things. But it was just a message. They are obviously much stronger than that. They can be much stronger than that.
But that was just a kind of a warning tap. You did something.
A warning tap.
Yes.
I was disrespecting their height. Now, the fact that a cougar is much smaller than a human from a height standpoint should not be taken as a measure of comfort. As we mentioned very early on in the show, their leaping ability is quite legendary, and being able to jump straight up about 18 feet is quite an advantage over most people.
Over most everything.
Over most everything, yes. And
they can climb trees and look down upon you and jump down.
The phrase that we coined was the cougar hat. And the cougar hat is usually a condition that develops around the age of 2, for when a cougar suddenly realizes that they have this tremendous leaping ability and likes to demonstrate that at every opportunity they possibly can. And
so you get to wear a cougar on your head?
And many times they may jump directly from the ground up onto your shoulders, directly from the ground up onto your head. And the strength of these leaps are such that you can literally pick them up off of your shoulders, put them back down on the ground, and by the time you're standing up, they're back on your head again. it's great fun for them, I'm sure. At the same time, it can be a little disconcerting to see this tawny missile jump from the ground, and you know, they may be around knee height for a human, an average sized human, and then suddenly be on your head that quickly.
Yes, the cougar hat. Yes.
The cougar hat. And they're built for this. You know, we talked about their description. They are built like hot rods. So their hindquarters are a little bit higher than their forequarters. And that's where all that tremendous leaping muscle is at.
Going back to the difference between the species, if you were to take a Florida panther and put it next to one of the cougars at the facility, would you know the difference?
Probably not. And it probably depends a little bit on which cougar you put the Florida panther next to. Kukla is probably about 70 pounds soaking wet. And by the way, cougars don't like water, so don't do that.
But they can swim.
They can, but they really don't like water.
Okay. All right.
You know, they're like domestic cats in that regard. You know, you wanna get a cougar's attention, you know, because they're misbehaving. A little spray with water is very effective, even though you'll probably get talked to very nastily for a moment from them. But for example, Kukla, she's probably got the best size, closest to a Florida panther. However, in terms of coloration, Kiki, who is a little bit richer, she's got reddish tints to her tawny fur because she hails from Costa Rica. She's a Costa Rican cougar. And so we might end up having a little bit darker features like that.
So there are some differences, you could say, but in general, for someone that didn't know that much about the differences, you would probably not know which one was the Florida panther and which one was a different kind of cougar.
Probably not. And that speaks to the sad situation that Florida panthers are still highly endangered. When you're talking about a species that has less than 200 members, just
yes,
seeing a Florida panther is a rare event indeed. And those times that Florida panthers have been seen, whether in or out of their range, they generally will just look like a cougar.
It is our state animal, by the way. In 1981, school children voted on what should be the state animal, and Florida panther won over dolphins, alligators, and some other animals. So there isn't actually a state plan on what to do to try to keep the Florida panther in Florida. As we've mentioned, they're very small in numbers. One of the plans, for example, is to actually have some populations outside of Florida.
You're right. There have been a number of plans that are out there that talked about trying to perpetuate the Florida panther. And some of the plans have involved cougars from other parts of the country. And this has generally proven to be controversial, but perhaps somewhat necessary. One of the more controversial moves was when cougars from Texas were brought into Florida to help beef up and improve the quality of Florida panthers. So they relocated these cougars from Texas to Florida and let them loose so that they could breed with the Florida panthers and make them less sickly.
And actually, it's interesting because, you know, when you say, oh, they relocated these cougars, you think, oh, how many? It's only 8 of them that they relocated. It wasn't like a huge number, but it made a big difference in the genetic pool because the gene pool here is so small. There's so few members of the Florida panther.
Right. And it is, of course, one of those reasons why people have said that the Florida panther is no longer its own species, because they've had this genetic material introduced from outside, which is in my opinion, it's a very narrow way to look at it. The Florida panther is so locked into this particular area that just because it's a different species of cougar that may have started it, they are just as much Floridian as most of the rest of the people who move here.
That's a good point. But yes, the Florida panther has been known to have some problems with genetic deficiencies, like kinked tails and other issues, because of not having enough diversity, but also because of chemicals, with different kinds of exposure to environmental chemicals such as pesticides and fertilizers, and those kind of chemicals being in and around them and in their diet, essentially, that has caused some issues with their genetics, because some of the male cougars or Florida panthers were not able to mate anymore. And that in itself led to more inbreeding and more issues with the Florida panthers.
Right. And this is one of those species where any small change in the environment, any small threat to their continued existence, is going to be magnified a great deal. And it should be a lesson to all of us to recognize that these things are happening to us as well. Humans are having negative effects that are happening to us based upon the changes that we have inflicted upon our environments. And it can be as simple as all the hormones in the water, for example, hormones and pharmaceuticals in the water, or the fact that we are starting to contaminate our rapidly dwindling aquifer. So all of these pieces come together in the Florida panther because they are, in some ways, the canary that's telling us that we need to do a better job taking care of our state and have some serious conversations about what it's going to take in order to preserve the lands that they're in.
Yes, because obviously that helps us as well. If we're able to preserve the lands for them, it helps the environment that we're in. And I know that they've built some corridors. Like, for example, there are some actual overpasses where the Florida panther, it's designed for bears and panthers and other animals to be able to go underneath roads and not be having to walk on top of the roads and getting run over. And these kind of corridors are kinds of things that Florida's put in place in order to connect different areas of habitat together so that the panthers can move up and down the state in different areas and actually have a wider range, because they do have a wide range of area that they need to survive.
The good news is that they are expanding, and we know that Florida panthers have been seen far north of where their listed range is actually at. So for those people out there in Florida that actually see a Florida panther, just count yourself lucky. You don't need to raise a huge alarm, but consider it one of those last moments where you might get to see a species that could be saying goodbye in a short time.
CFAR Sounding is a production of Central Florida Animal Reserve,
where we engage the world of big cats through our mottos of compassion, conservation, and commitment.
At CFAR, when it comes to big cats, it's about vision.
Send us your thoughts. You can get us on email via contact@cflar.org.
Tune in again next week for more discussion. My name is Asla Gonser.
And I'm Simba Wiltz. Thanks for listening to CFAR Sounding.